Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psachim Daf Samach Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the Mishnah in the middle of Daf Samach Dalet Omid Aleph. This Mishnah, take note, is a relatively speaking long Mishnah. It will carry us to the upper few lines of Omid Beis, and it represents the Mishnah till the end of the Perek. The Mishnah will describe the actual procedure of offering the Korban Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash. HaPesach Nishchat B'Sholosh Kitos. The Korban Pesach was slaughtered. Naturally, it was a public sacrifice that all of the Jewish people were involved with this. So it was slaughtered in three groups. And this idea of three groups applies whether there are a lot of people or there are very few people. But there is a mitzvah to divide the Korban Pesach doers into three groups. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, V'shachatu oisoi kol kahal adas Yisrael. There are three words here, each one of them representing a group of 10 people, as we will see later on. Kahal, the Edo, the Israel, three separate groups. Nichnaso kaso rishona, nismalo hazora. Once the first group enters and the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash fills up, noalu dalsois hazora. They then closed or locked the doors of the hazora. Toku hariu v'toku. There was then a sounding of the shofar, tkia, trua, and tkia. Hakoyanim oimdim shuros. The kohanim were positioned in rows. Uvidehem bozichei kesef ubozichei zohav. The rows of kohanim were leading from the shechita site, from where the slaughtering of the animals, and we're talking about sheep and goats, which would be the animals appropriate for the Korban Pesach. So there were from the shechita site till the Beis HaMikdash, till the altar, the Mizbeach, there were rows of Kohanim whose purpose was to receive and hand off from one to the next the Mizrokim. Those are the receptacles in which the blood of the sacrificed had been received. So there was the, after the receipt of the blood, the Kohen who received the blood would then hand the vessel with the blood to the next Kohen in a row, handing from one to the next, all leading up till the altar. And at the same time, we will see very shortly that the empty vessels, after the blood was actually applied to the base of the Mizbeach, the empty vessels were then returned in the same fashion, just in the reverse direction. So Kohanim were standing rows and rows, ubidehem bozichei kesef ubozichei zahav, and they had in their hands, bozich is a receptacle, sort of a cup-like entity that we will learn later on came to a type of tapered tip to it. It didn't have a base that it could sit on its own, these bozichen, but they were, nevertheless, they were receptacles holding that would hold the blood. And they were made of kesef, silver, and zov, gold. Shura shekula kesef kesef, shura shekula zahav zahav. Lo hoyu muravim. The rows of Kohanim would hold, each row would hold either just silver vessels or just gold vessels. They wouldn't mix them up. As we just said, these receptacles did not have a flat bottom to it, so as to avoid the Kohanim setting it down on the ground with the fear of it being forgotten there and the blood would coagulate and wouldn't be fit yikrashes coagulate, and it wouldn't be fit for pouring or sprinkling at the base of the mizbeach. Shochat Yisrael v'kibel ha-kohen, the Yisrael means non-kohanim were fit for shechita. They can do the slaughtering. However, from that point onwards, a kohen and only a kohen must be involved. That's v'kibel ha-kohen. He would hold the mizrok, the bozichin that we just made reference to. He would hold that near the neck of the animal and receive the blood in that receptacle, the bozich. Noisnoi lechavera vechavera lechavera. He would hand it to his neighboring coin in the row, and he to the next one. Umekabel es hamole umachsir es orekon. And the order here is significant. The Gemara will make reference to that. That the at any given point, the kohen would first receive a full vessel and then return the empty one to the kohen behind him. Umachsir. As we say here, that's umekabel es hamole umachsir es orekan. It's return the empty one. Kohen hakorov etzel hamizbeach zorko zriko achas keneged hayisod. The kohen who was near the mizbeach, he would zriko is an expression indicating a type of splashing action of the blood from the distance. Zriko literally means he would throw it, would throw the blood, obviously not the vessel. He would just throw the blood at a point at which there was a base to the mizbeach. That's keneged hayisod. We will learn later that the base of the mizbeach did not run around all four sides of the mizbeach, but it existed on two of the four sides of the mizbeach primarily. Yotzisa kas rishona v'nichnasa kas shnia. We mentioned before that the Pesach was done in three groups. So when the first group finished, they would exit, and the second group would enter. Yotso shnia v'nichnaso shlishis. After the second group finished, they would exit, and the third group would enter. K'maisa rishona k'maisa shnia v'shlishis. As the first group did it, so too the second and third groups did it. Koru es ha-halel. There was a recitation of the Hallel. The Tosfos says the Levim would recite the Hallel, im gomru shanu, and if they finished the Hallel and the group were still involved in the slaughtering and the sprinkling and the application of the blood, so shanu, they would repeat. It would be a cyclical type reading. Vim shanu, and if they finished the second round of Hallel recitation, shilshu, they would do it a third time. It never really happened that they said the Hallel a third time. And Rashi explains there were just a large number of kohanim processing the korbanos, so that the job was done fairly quickly, not leaving enough time, so to speak, to have the Hallel go through a third round. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mimeim shokas shlishis lo higiu le'afti ki yishma mipnei she'amo Mu'otim. Rabbi Yehuda points out that when it comes to the third group, it said historically, when the third group entered, they never even finished Hallel, the whole Hallel prayer one time. They only got up to the paragraph. They got up to the paragraph of Ohafti Ki Yishma, which is, we'll say, in the middle of the Hallel. So they never got beyond the half of the first reading of the Hallel, as far as the third group was concerned. Kimaseu b'chol kach maseu b'shabbos. Basically, the way it was done on a weekday, so too it would be done on the 14th of Nisan that fell out on a Shabbos. Elo shehakohanim madichim es ho'azora sheloi b'rotzon chachomim. Let's take a look at Rashi on this. There was a stream of water, Maleches Bazora, that flowed through the Beis HaMikdash courtyard. If they wanted to wash the stone floor of the Azora, they would seal up the exit hole, the exit point of this stream. And naturally, the water would continue flowing in, having no exit point. V'amayim poishtin v'hochin al geduseha. The water would rise above the banks of this stream in the Beis HaMikdash courtyard. U'madichin es kol v'azora. It would end up washing off the floor of the Azora. She ritzpo shel shayish hoisa kula was a shayish is marble form of stone, a marble floor. And after the floor got washed off with this inundation of water, the poischin hanekev v'hamayim yoitzin, they would open up the exit point and the water would exit. Ube'erev haPesach mitoch shadomim Ruben, on Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, being that there were many, many sacrifices there and the blood, there was a lot of blood around. Hoyomadichin oisa, they would do this washing process. Va'koyim hoyomadichin oisa b'Shabbos shelo brotz chachamim. They would do this on Shabbos as well, and that was not with the approval of the chachamim. That too will be discussed later. Rabbi Yehuda Omer kois hoyom mimale midam hataroves. From the Gemara later on, Rabbi Yehuda's approach to this sealing up of the hole was essentially to make it such that the blood would accumulate on the floor, and they would scoop up a cup of blood from the floor. And the reason for that is it will be explained in the Gemara. But Rabbi Yehuda is trying to we'll say take into account or offer a solution for any situation of blood from a particular korban that might have spilled out and never reached the mizbeach. So this was his takona, his solution for such a problem, by scooping up some random blood from the floor and sprinkling that on the mizbeach. V'lo hodu lo chachamim, the chachamim disagreed with that approach. Now, after having dealt with the slaughtering and the acceptance of the blood, the receipt of the blood, and the conveyance of it to the altar, the Mishnah now deals with the issue of the animals themselves and their skinning, how the skin was removed. Ketzad toilin umafshitin, how were they suspended and then skinned? Unklius shel barzel hoyikuvim b'ksalim uv'amudim. There were unklius, or hooks, made of bars of iron that were set into the walls and were also set upon poles. Shebohen toilin umafshitin, and the animals would be suspended by these hooks, and once they were suspended, you can then remove the skin from them. Kol mi she'ein lo mokem litlosu lahavshin. If someone had no room, in other words, had no hook for his korban, maklois dakim v'chalokim hoyu shom. There were poles that were thin and stripped of their bark. That's wooden poles. Maklos are literally sticks. They were thin, but apparently they were strong enough, as you can see, to suspend from them an animal. So they had these thin sticks, and chalokim, the bark, was removed from them, that were hoyusham, that were there in the Beis HaMikdash. Menich ha-ksefo v'al-kosef chavero, the toilu mafshit. The poles would be suspended between two people standing opposite each other, and on their shoulders they had suspended these poles, laid these poles on their shoulders, and tied the animal to the poles, suspended the animal from them, and skinned the animal. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Yud Dalet is the 14th of Nisan. We continue at the top of Omid Beis, Shechalios B'Shabbos, on the 14th of Nisan, that fell out on a Shabbos, and they couldn't have prepared these poles, these wooden poles with the stripped bark. Apparently, from Rashi, one gets the impression that these poles were prepared on the spot. So on Shabbos, that cannot be done. Maniach yodoy al kosef chavero v'yad chavero al ksefoy v'toyle umafshid. So each two people would suspend their arms lay their hands on the shoulder of their friend, and then hang the animal on their arms. The arms functioning as the poles that we just described. Koru v'hotziyos emurav, they would open up the animal, tear it open, and remove its innards. These innards are ultimately going to go to the mizbeach. Nosnu b'megis v'ktiron al-gabi ha-mizbeach, they were placed in a megis, in a type of a bowl, and they were then offered on the mizbeach. Yotzisa kas harishona v'yoshva lo b'harbayis. Let's assume that we are talking about Shabbos, and that's what, as Rashi explains, on Shabbos when the first group finished their Korban Pesach, finished processing the Korban Pesach, and they have to go home, go to some place in Yerushalayim. Home, they're not going home if they're from outside Yerushalayim, they have to go take it to be roasted. Now, the roasting didn't take place on Shabbos. And they weren't going to carry it through the streets of Yerushalayim on Shabbos. So what was the solution? So when the first group finished, they went, the Yoshva Lo Bahar HaBayis, they sat at some location on the Har HaBayis. Har HaBayis is the Temple Mount, which is the area certainly outside the Azorah. And there's actually further breakdowns when we're dealing with Har HaBayis, as we will see shortly. So the first group would go sit on a location in Har HaBayis. As we said, they couldn't carry their Korban Pesach to where they were staying. Shnia b'chayel, the chayel is, Rashi says, Lefnei hasoreg hu bein hasoreg b'chomas ezras noshim b'tchilas aliyas har. There was an area that was called the chayel, which was between a type of wall called the soreg, a type of, let's say, boundary entity, and the wall of the women's courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, which is at the beginning of the ascent of the Temple Mount, as Rashi describes it. So for our purposes, there was the first group was located on Har HaBayis, the second group was located in this area called Chel, and Vashlishis b'mekoyma oimedes, and the third group, they remained standing in the Azorah. It's pointed out that when it comes to the Azorah, one could not sit. That's why in the first two places you had Yoshva lo Bahar HaBayis, and the second group would be sitting in the Chel. But when you're in the Azor itself, only the king from the Beis David, from the family of the Davidic dynasty, only he was allowed to sit in the Azorah. So the third group of Jews that had processed their Korban Pesach would remain standing in the Azorah until the end of Shabbos. Chashecha, then when darkness set in, representing the end of Shabbos, Yotsu v'tzolu es pischeim. They went and roasted their Korban Pesachs. And of course we're talking about what we would call the Seder night, the Leil Seder. That's what was just mentioned here. And as we mentioned before, only now the roasting can take place, because on Shabbos, the roasting of the Korban Pesach, even though one can slaughter it and do some skinning of it, but the actual roasting, that does not supersede the rules of Shabbos. The Gemara. Omar Rav Yitzchok, Ein HaPesach Nishchat Elo B'Sholosh Kitas Shel Shloshim Shloshim B'nei Odom. The Korban Pesach is to be slaughtered in groups of no less than 30 people. My taima, why must there be 30 people in each group? The Gemara answers. Kehal, the aid of Yisrael. We have those three words, the Mishnah made reference to them. And each word represents 10 people, and there are other sources. The Gemara doesn't prove that point over here, so we're going to work with that as a basic assumption, that a Kahal and Adah and Yisrael, each one represents a group of 10. The Pasuk said, Vishachta also called Kahal Adas Yisrael, Nesafgalon, we have a doubt. I bebas achas, the pasuk that makes reference to a total of 30 people, does that mean 30 people at one time? I boze acharze, or does it mean 30 people in groups of 10 succeeding groups, one following the other. So we have a doubt. Hilkoch, therefore, bo'inon shalosh kitos shel shloishim shloishim b'nei odom. Therefore, we require three groups, each group of 30 people. De'i bebas achas ho'iko. If the requirement of 30 is a 30 at one time, so, okay, I've accomplished that. I have a group of 30 people in one group. The I bozeh acharzeh, if the reference to 30 were in groups of 10, one following the other, but it's a reference to three succeeding groups, ha'iko, well, that I've accomplished also by having three groups of 30, one following the other. And so therefore, by having a total of 90 people, three groups of 30, I'm covering all bases. However, you don't really need to have 90 people. Hilkoch b'chamishim nami sagya. Even if you have 50 people, it will be enough. And how do you accomplish this idea of minimum of three groups and having a total of 30 in each group? Da'ili talsin v'afti. 30 people will enter and do their Korban Pesach. So that accomplishes your basic 30. What about the three group element? Well, Aili Asora Venafki Asora. After the 30 finished, 10 more people that haven't done a Korban Pesach will enter, and 10 that were already there will leave. So at this point, then I have a second group of 10, which was one of the sides of our doubt mentioned just before. So here's a second group of 10 that enters, and at that point they do their Korban Pesach. Aili Asora, when the second group of 10 finishes, so a new group of 10 will enter. Venafki Asora, and 10 that were there before will now leave. So what we have seen here is that with a total of 50 people, I accomplish both. I cover my tracks. Both elements of the doubt are accomplished. I have certainly a total of 30 people, and I have three groups of a minimum of 10 as well. Nifnaso kas rishono, and the Mishnah went on to say nismalo hazora. Noalu dalsus hazora. At this point, we have a topic heading that we want to glance at on the side. The nosei, the topic heading, nilas dalsus hazora. We're going to talk about the locking of the doors of the courtyard. B'shoa shenismalo mi b'nei odom, when it got filled with people. Machlikas abaye v'rova. We'll see a controversy between these two authorities. Im ninalu me'alein b'derech neis. Did the doors close automatically? As if there were, in modern terms, you might refer to it as some kind of sensor or electric eye that sensed the Azara was filled, and as far as in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, through a miracle, the doors closed on their own. So that as far as establishing when was the Azara filled, we would be relying on this miracle, v'samchinon anisa, oi no alu oisam, or there was an active closing on the part of those who were in charge, for lo soimchen alanes, and we don't rely on a miracle. The Gemara, Itmar Abai Omar Nin Alu Tnan. The word in the Mishnah, instead of what we have printed in our Mishnah, was no alu. Abai says the word is Nin Alu, which means on their own. They locked on their own, they closed on their own after the maximum capacity of people filled the Azora, the courtyard. Rova Omar, no alin tnan. There was an action taken on the part of those in charge to close the doors once the Azora was filled up, but not relying on some miracle. My binayu, what is the point of difference? Ikar binayu lemismach anisa. Should one rely on a miracle? There's a Rashi, samchinu anisa v'chozman she'en ninolin me'alehen, as long as they didn't close on their own. Manicha moisam likonis, we would let people enter v'lo chayshino dilma aili kulu v'en kan sholosh kitas, and we wouldn't choshesh, we wouldn't suspect that, well, maybe everyone is already there and there won't be any subsequent groups to fulfill the requirement of three groups. So according to the approach that says soimcha l'anes, we will rely on the miracle of them closing on their own, thereby at the same time providing that providing for another two groups of people to enter. Abaye Omar ninalu tanan. Abaye's version is they closed on their own. Kamo da'ilu ma'alu, as many as could enter would enter. And v'samchin anisam, we would rely on the nace that the doors would close when the maximum capacity was reached, while also providing for enough people left outside to fulfill the quota of having two more groups. Rava Omar noy alin tnan. Rava says no. There was a proactive measure to close the doors. V'lo samchin on anisa, and not rely on a miracle. As we go on, we have a Tanaic source that's cited that deals with, that touches upon this issue of the doors of the Azara closing, and a critical word is to be the focus of Abaye and Rava's attention, and it's dashed underline at the end of the line, which you could see, Nin Eles, which is a reference to the closing of the doors of the Azara. There is a, the source itself is really from a totally outside context, and the just a brief background. Rashi gives you a fuller background to this, but abbreviated background to this source is there was a machlokas tanoim between the Chachomim and Rebbe Yehuda concerning the personality of Akavya ben Mehalalel. And the question arose, would he have said something of a disparaging nature to with regard to the great Tanoim Shmaya v'Avtalion, or it, that could not be that he would have said anything disparaging. Granted, we're not giving you the full story right now. You can look in Rashi for more. We want to focus on our issue, not get lost in anything of a side nature right now. So the source says, the Ha Disnan Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was here reacting to the Chomim that had some negative things to say regarding Akavya ben Malalel. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Chas v'shalom, heaven forbid, she Akavya ben Malalel is not there, that he would have been the one to have been put into excommunication. She'ein azora nin eles al kol odom b'Yisrael b'chochma uviras chet ke Akavya ben Malalel. When the Korban Pesach was done and the multitudes of Klal Yisrael came, you should know, says Rabbi Yehuda, that the gates of the Azara, when they closed, there was no greater person contained in the Azara by way of wisdom and being a God fearing man as Akavya ben Malalel. So this source, using the Azara analogy, is showing how Akavya was a very great man. But now what we want to focus on is this idea of the doors of the Azara nin Elis. Abaye mitaretz latame, v'Rava mitaretz latame. Both Abaye and Rava explain according to their own opinions. Abaye mitaretz latame, you can see we've used a double underline here and the end of the next line, Rava mitaretz latame. Bearing in mind that Abaye, when focusing on the closing of the doors, he would say they closed on their own, and Rava would say that there was an action, a proactive measure to close them. So the Abaye explains, Ein v'azora b'shal she'nin ala, and we dashed underline that, that's the key word, that there was no one in the courtyard when the gates closed on their own. Al kol odom Yisrael, v'chochmo v'yiras cheka kavim alayelo. There was no one parallel to kavim alayelo at the point that the gates of the Azor closed on their own. Rava metaras tamei, Rava explaining the source, specifically that word in his approach, Ein Bazora b'sho'o shenoi alim oisa. Notice the dashed underline. This is Rava's approach. There was no one in the Azora when they actively closed the doors. When they closed the doors on the people found in the Azora. There's no one parallel to Kavya when they actively closed the doors, as opposed to the doors closing on their own. Tonu Rabbanan, Me'olam lo nismayich odam ba'azora. Nismayich is something that has to do with something being crushed. We could say trampled. No one was ever trampled in the Azora. Even though you're dealing with great multitudes of people, exactly how many people, that will be touched. The Gemara will touch on that very shortly. So there were tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, and you'll see even more than that. When the people were coming to do their Korban Pesach, no one was ever trampled there. Chutz mi Pesach Echad, Shebimei Hillel, with the exception of one Pesach, in the days of the great Tana Hillel, she nismayach bo yizoken echad, one elderly man was trampled, v'yukurin oisoy pesach meuchin, and they referred to that as the Pesach of the trampled ones. And it was because it was such an unusual event, it gained fame and was called that. You can see we've used a diamond marking to highlight the expression for Yukurino so here, and in the next source where there were some special something special happened, and that Pesach got a special name or was referred to that as such. So here in the case of this unfortunate one time event of an elderly man getting trampled, it became known as Pesach Meuchin. Tonu Rabbanan Pamach as Vikesh Agrippa Samelech, Litain Einov Beuchlusi Yisrael. We have Ton Rabbon introduces a Tanaic source which says that there was once upon a time the king Agrippus. He was a king at the latter part of the second Beis Hamikdash period, and he wanted to take a census, count the population. So he wanted to, he says, Bikesh Agrippa Samech Litain Einov Beuchlusei Yisrael. Now, just a preface to this particular issue, and that is that an actual person counting, where you point your finger at Mr. 1 and say 1, next guy you call him 2, 3, that type of actual, literal, direct form of counting is strictly forbidden in Jewish law. There are discussions in contemporary halacha concerning Jewish people participating in something that we refer to as a census, filling out forms and sending them into government offices representing your being counted. So let us also just restrict our remarks to a counting of the Jewish people, which have relevance particularly in the land of Israel today. So with that preface, Agrippus, he was apparently aware of that, and he did want to take a census, but he couldn't just count the people 1, 2, 3 as we described before. So what did he do? Omar le Kohen Gadol, he turned to the Kohen Gadol, who, and he said, "Tein einecho bepsachim, pay attention to the Korban Pesachs, to the number of sacrificial offerings that are being processed." Notal kulyo mikol echad, he took a kidney from each one. V'nimsu shom shishim ribo zuge kloyos. The term ribo is 10,000. Shishim ribo is 60 times 10,000. That would be 600,000. 60 times 10,000, 600,000. Zuge are pairs. Zuge kloyos. So that's 600,000 pairs. That's 1.2 million. We're 1.2 million kidneys. Kiflayim kiyotze Mitzrayim. Representing twice the number of those who exited in the Exodus from Mitzrayim. In the Exodus from Mitzrayim, the Torah recounts that were 600,000 males between the ages of 20 and 60. With regard to this particular event in history, there were 1.2 million animals, because they took one kulya, one kidney from each animal. Even though an animal has two kidneys, they took one from each one, found there were 1.2 million kidneys. And now that represents a number of people, chutz mitome v'shoye b'derech rechoka, other than those people who were tome, who could not have brought a carbon pesach, and people who were outside the area. Literally, they were on a far away place. They were derech rechoka. They were outside of the boundary that requires you to come to Yerushalayim to do the Korban Pesach. So they were far away. So those people were not included either. You have the defiled people and the people that were far away. How many people then were there? We have to continue. V'ein l'chokol pesach u'pesach shlo nimnu lov yoyser me'asor b'nei adaman. Each Korban Pesach had no more than 10 people. So that you have 1.2 million animals represented, each animal representing 10 people, each animal having no more than 10 people, so you have a number of 12 million people referred to here. That's a lot of people. V'hoyu koren oso pesach me'uvin. And that pesach, historical event, was referred to as pesach me'uvin. And the word me'uvin is a word that has a connection to the concept of multitudes, of large amounts. Rashi says pesach me'uvin, of literally means thick. But al shem sha'om rov, in commemoration of the large number of people. There is a gemara that we learned earlier in the Masicht at the end of Daf Lamed Vav Amid Beis, and carries over to Lamed Zayin Amid Aleph, regarding dough and quantity of dough one may prepare on Pesach without getting involved with its fermentation. So the source there had said, Ein oifin pas ovo. The same word appears over the Pesach, and the Gemara on Daf Lamed Zayin explained pas meruba. Let us turn back to the Gemara. Notal kulya, the source, and you can see we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the arrow a few lines above, and the dashed underlined expression on that particular line said they took, for the census purposes, they took a kulya. Means it sounds like they took it out and counted the kulyas and then threw them away somewhere. But ha boy aktura, but they need to be offered on the mizbeach. It's part of the emurim of the animals. The emurim are the innards of the korbanos, that even though the bulk of the animal was eaten by the population, but there was a section, a part of the animal that was offered on the fire, and that included the kulya. So how could you say they removed the kulya for census purposes? Answer, the Hodar Maktilu. After they were used in the census, they were then assembled and put in the fire. The Gemara asks, how could they do that? How could they take a mass of kidneys and throw them all at one time into the fire? V'hoksiv v'hiktiru. And that word implies, it teaches, Shelo ya'arev chalovuv shelzeh bozeh. Chalovuv is a reference to the innards of the animals, and that is that the chalovim of one Korban Pesach, the innards of one Korban Pesach, should not be mixed up with the innards of a second Korban Pesach. So, but what you just said with regard to the kidneys, they just gathered all the kidneys and threw them all mixed together into the fire. No, that's not what happened. The Hodar Maktir Luhu Chado Chado. when it came to the offering of the kidneys, they were offered one at a time, one by one, not thrown all together at one time into the fire. The Hotanya, we have a source that says Vihikti Rum, Shiei Kulo Ke'echod, which would mean that all of the Emurim of a particular animal have to be together. And what we were suggesting just now is that, well, the kidneys, which are part of the Emurim, will be offered, albeit one at a time, but they'll be offered separately. But this Pasuk, Vihikti Rum, tells me that all the innards of one particular carbon, and the kidneys being just one of the organs constituting the innards, but all the innards of each carbon must be together. The Gemara answers, Elo tfisa bi'alma, all that really happened with regard to the kidneys, it's not that the kidneys were removed and tossed in some type of central location before they're being offered, but rather they were, each kidney was raised, let's say, above the head, and someone was taking note of that. Tfisa is literally a mere grabbing or holding of the kidney. Ela tfisa bi'alma de shokil minayu adiyovin le midi achrino. So just imagine the following. As each Korban Pesach was processed and the innards were removed, someone would raise a kidney, and someone else noting that would then put a pebble aside for each kidney, and then a box full of pebbles would have accumulated upon seeing each kidney, and they would have then count all the pebbles, and that would reveal the number that they were seeking. As far as the kidney is concerned, it was raised for a moment, note was taken, it was put back down together with the rest of the innards of that particular korban and offered in that fashion, thereby satisfying all the requirements we just mentioned. Koinim Ondin Shuros, the Mishnah described the rows of Kohanim and the silver and gold blood receptacles, and it said in the Mishnah they would Shuro Shekula Kesef Kesef for Shuro Shekula Zohov Zohov. The Gemara asks, my taimo, why was it done this way, that you'd have a row of just silver? Why not have in each given row of Kohanim silver and gold receptacles being passed back and forth? E lema, if you're going to say Dilma shakli didava umayli dekaspa, that the following situation we want to avoid, where shakli didava, someone would, a kohen would return back an empty gold vessel, so he would have been holding a gold vessel. Gold is more significant than silver; it's more valuable. He would return a gold vessel, and then umayli dekaspa, and then receive a full vessel of blood that was of silver. And that would be a problem we call Moridin Bekodesh, where you are diminishing the significance of something that is holy. In other words, a moment before you were holding a gold vessel, you're going to be handing back an empty gold vessel that you were holding and now receiving in its place a full silver vessel. And that, you would say, is a problem of Moridin Bekodesh, of diminishing sanctity level. Well, that can't be your problem, because Hochonami, now too that all the rows were uniform in terms of metallic nature, Dilmo Shakli Bar Moson Umayli Bar Mea. Each vessel, my assumption is that the vessels were not manufactured on some kind of uniform assembly line, but they were handcrafted vessels. Some vessels were bar mosen, bar mosen means 200, and bar mea 100. Whatever that means, it was worth, one vessel was worth $200, and the other vessel worth $100. So that even if the rows are maintained in a uniform metallic format, nevertheless, each vessel might have a different value level. So the same problem would arise as someone who was holding a $200 vessel would be handing it back to the Kohen closer to the slaughter site, and in exchange he would then be receiving a $100 vessel. So you have the same problem of going down in value, where I was previously holding something of 200, giving that away and getting, receiving in its place something worth 100. And yet that doesn't bother us, because all we're concerned with is the nature of the metal, not the value of each vessel. So if that be the case, then why is it that there was an interest in uniformity? It couldn't have been because of value of vessels. Elo de hachi shapir tfei. Simply, it has a, because it looks nicer. It has a nicer appearance. And in the Beis HaMikdash in general, there was concern with things looking very nice and impressive. Velo hoyu lobozichen shulayim. The Mishnah had mentioned that the receptacles holding the blood did not have a flat base. Tonu rabbanan kol hazbozichen shebemikdash lo hoyu lahem shulayim. All the bozichen vessels, these receptacle vessels, were did not have a flat base. They tapered to a point, well, as we explained earlier, so as to prevent their being placed on the ground. If they had a flat base, so they could be placed on the ground and people could forget about whatever, forget about them and their contents. So all the bozichin in the Beis HaMikdash did not have a flat bottom. Chutz mi bozichei levoino shel lechem aponim. With the exception of the bozichin, the receptacles that held the levono spice that was placed on the table, the golden table holding the 12 lechem aponim, sometimes referred to as the showbreads, in the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, why in that case did it have a base? Well, you see, if it didn't have a base, so then how would you position these bozichim holding the Levona, which, by the way, sat on the Shulchan for a week, from week to week, from Shabbos to Shabbos, how would they be positioned there? Well, you'd have to lean them along against the side of the breads. Now, the breads had a very unique shape to them. They were, so machlokis in Maseches Menachos exactly what they looked like, but one of the pshatim is called a teva prutza, which would mean a box that had only two sides. So if you can imagine such a thing, a box having two sides to it and two other sides open, and you had then these bozichin that were leaning up against these breads, that it could break the wall of the bread. You had two upright sides of this baked loaf. It was baked in the shape of a two-sided box. So the sides, the vertical sides, if they would be receiving the pressure of a leaning bozich on them, shemo yanichum v'yifrois halechem. That's what the source describes in Hebrew, that which we just described, that they might, yanichum is place them down, v'yifrois halechem, and break the bread. Shochat Yisrael v'kibel hakoyen v'chulei. The Mishnah says that the slaughtering took place by non-Kohanim. The nosei, the topic heading on the side, you can see reads, Yisrael yochol lishchot b'kodshim avol mikabol v'elech mitzvah kuhuna. A non-Kohen is allowed to do the slaughtering, but from the point of blood receipt and onwards, the receiving of the blood, the carrying of blood to the Mizbeach, and the ultimate sprinkling on the base of the Mizbeach, all of that had to be done by Kohanim exclusively. The Mishnah says that a Yisrael would shecht and a Kohen would receive the blood. Now, as far as the Shechita is concerned, does it have to be done specifically by a Yisrael? Linguistically, that's the conclusion that one would reach, because we know that the Kabbalah is done exclusively by Kohanim, so it would stand to reason that if the Mishnah says Shochat Yisrael, that the Shechita should be done exclusively by non-Kohanim. So the Gemara asks, is that really true? Lo Sagya Delav Yisrael? Could it not be a non-Yisrael that would do the Shechita? The Gemara answers, he gufo kamash malon. The Mishnah is here to tell me that very point. In other words, the Mishnah is not here to tell me that only Yisrael, but rather the Shechita bizarre kshera. We'll call it the surprising information here is that even though this is a non-Kohen and we're involved with sacrificial activity, nevertheless, the Shechita stage can be done by a Zara. A Zara is a non-Kohen. So the Mishnah is not telling me that that a Yisrael shechts, meaning exclusively a Yisrael, but rather that a Yisrael is allowed to shecht. The Kibel HaKohen, the expression in the Mishnah said the Kohen receives the blood, Ha Komash Malon. The following is what the Mishnah wants us to learn, Mikabola V'Eilech Mitzvahs Kahuna. From that point onwards, from the receipt of the blood onwards, only Kohanim are charged with that. Noisnoi L'Chavero. This is a new point, another point in the, as far as the Mishnah is concerned. The Mishnah said the blood is then handed from one Kohen to the next. And through this handoff method, it would eventually reach the Mizbeach. This process is called Holocha. Holocha is the transportation of the blood from the Kabbalah site, the Shechita Kabbalah site, to the Mizbeach. How was it done over here? It seems that it was done by a handoff method. So the Gemara asks, Shamas Mino, should we conclude from here, Holocha Sheloi Beregel Havi Holocha, that a non-walking form of transportation is considered Holocha, fulfills the Holocha requirement? The Gemara says, no, don't conclude that. The truth be told that this is a major discussion elsewhere in the Shas, and Rashi points that out. It's a machlokus in the end of the first perek of Zvochim. Is Holocha Shelo Beregel, generally speaking, Holocha is the transportation through walking, but can the process or the stage known as holocha, the transportation, be accomplished shelo berega without an act of walking? So the Gemara says, no, don't conclude that from over here. True, the Mishnah spoke about a handoff from one to the other. However, Dilma hu nayid purta. It could be that he, Nayid, is moved a little bit, like he shuffled along just a little bit on the floor, and after shuffling just a trifle amount, he handed it to the next Kohen. So if that's the case, so then what significance is there that there was a handoff from one to the next? If in effect it was just another form of holocha, why does the Mishnah tell us about it's being handed from one to the next? So the Gemara says, "Vel amai komashmon." So what is the Mishnah telling me when it informs me of it being handed from one to the next? When in effect there was a walking that took place as well. Ha komashmon. The point of the Mishnah is, "Beroiv am hadras melech." The more people involved, the greater the glory and the honor bestowed to the Almighty. So that what the Mishnah is really telling us is, according to this approach, that there was standard holocha, but it was a minimum amount of actual walking that took place, so as to increase the number of those involved with the whole process to create or accomplish this goal of Barov Am, through the multitudes of people, Hadras Melech, you increase the glory of the king. Kibel es hamolei umachzir es harekon. The Mishnah is meduyok here with regard to order, and that's what the order of events. That in this line of Kohanim, the order was that he would first take a full cup, a full bozich of blood, and after taking that, after holding that, he would then return the empty one that he had received from the Mizbeach. Avo ipcho loy, but switching the order, that would not be acceptable. In other words, we'll just focus in on two Kohanim that are part of the line, and the Kohen closer to the slaughter site is facing the Kohen closer to the Mizbeach. To have the empty vessel returned first, and then handing the full vessel to the Kohen closer to the Mizbeach, that would not be okay. That's, and now the Gemara says, Messiah lay the Reb Shimon ben Lakish. This supports Reish Lakish, the Omer Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvos. One is not to skip over the chance, to pass up on a chance to do a mitzvah. So that, given that you have a full cup ready to be handed toward the Mizbeach, which is a mitzvah of Hoylochas Adam, that is to be accomplished first, before doing anything else, because you have a mitzvah at hand to do. So take the blood first, the blood in the receptacle, and then return the empty vessel. The Gemara continues. Koyin hakorov eitzal hamizbeach zor koy zriko achas kenegen hayisoid. Here the Gemara focuses on the expression zrika. Zrika sadam indicates the casting of the blood from a distance, from a certain distance in toward the mizbeach, as opposed to another method known as shvicha, of pouring the blood, where that would indicate you're standing right up against, right close up to the mizbeach, and you're pouring it out over the base of the mizbeach. But in our Mishnah, it said Zorko Izriko Achas Keneged Hayesod. It's cast from a bit of a distance to the side of the Mizbeach, under which there is a Yesod. Yesod is the base of the Mizbeach, which did not surround all four sides, so it was important to be at a side of the Mizbeach under which there was a base. Man Tana Pesach Bezriko. Which Tana holds that the Korban Pesach blood was applied through the Zrika method? Zrika indicating a distance as opposed to Shvicha, as opposed to pouring it. By the way, in terms of the Psukim in the Torah, you find references to different methods of applying blood. You find the term Zrika, you find the term Shvicha, and in the Korban Chatos you have a finger application of the blood. The Shvicha and the Zrika applications are while you are, you're not putting your finger in the blood itself, but rather you're using the vessel to pour or cast the blood therefrom. So our question now is, which Tana holds that the method of Korban Pesach blood application was through the Zrika method? Om Rav Chista, Rav Yossi Haglili. Rav Chista tells us it was the Tana Rav Yossi Haglili. Desanya, Rav Yossi Haglili Omer. He cites a pasuk from the topic of Bechor. Bechor is the requirement of firstborn male animals to be presented to a Kohen and offered as a sacrifice. So in the context of the Bechor, we'll call the Korban Bechor, it says, Es domom tizrok al hamizbeach, es chelbom tatir. The pasuk appears in the plural form. Domoi lo ne'amar elo domom. It doesn't say domo in the singular, but rather in the plural. Chelboi lo ne'amar elo chelbom. The chelev is a reference to the innards of the korban that are offered on the mizbeach. So the pasuk regarding the bechor sacrifice, it mentions the blood in the plural, domom tizroik, and chelbom taktir. This plural, in the context of a Bechor, Lime teaches us al Bechor u'maisru Pesach. The Bechor animal, which is the context of the Pasuk. Maiser is an animal tithe. One-tenth of that particular year's animal births are set aside. One-tenth of those births are set aside and brought by the owner to the Beis HaMikdash and offered as a sacrifice. And Pesach, that's obvious. The Korban Pesach. These three korbonos, shehen teunin matan domim ve'emurim legabi mizbeach. That even though when you learn the parshios of a meiser behema and Pesach, you don't see the Torah specifying the sprinkling of their blood and the offering of their innards, nevertheless, that standard sacrificial process does apply to them as well. And how do we know that? We know that from this pasuk. And in this pasuk, it's also worth emphasizing the term tizrok. And we saw Rabbi Yosef Glili, Tizrok means the blood was cast from the distance. Minolon de Teunin Yisod, from where do we know that the application of the blood of the Korban Pesach requires, of the Korban Pesach and these other Korbanos as well, the Bechor, Meiser, and Pesach, how do we know that they require the application of the blood on a part of the Mizbeach under which there is a base? As we said, the base runs around two sides of the Mizbeach, not all four sides of the altar. So from where do we know that the application of the blood should be at a point under which there is Yesoid? Omar Rebbe Lozer, Asya Zrika Zrika Me'oila. Through a Gezerah Shava, through a word comparison between these topics, this Pasuk and the Ola Korban, we learn this point. Ksiv Hacha Es Domam Tizrok Ves Al HaMizbeach. That's the Pasuk we just had. Uksiv Hasam, in the case of a Korban Ola, it says, Vizorku B'nei Aaron HaKoyanim Es Domoi Al HaMizbeach Soviv. So you have in both Psukim the term Zrika, giving us the ability to compare the rules of Pesach, Meiser, and Bechor to the rules of Ola. And we continue, Ma Ola Tuno Yisod, just like the Korban Ola requires Yisod, Af Pesach Nami Toun Yisod, so too the Korban Pesach requires, like was stated in our Mishnah, it too requires a Yisod. So the scriptural reference to the need for Yisod by the Korban Pesach is this Gezerah Shava. We continue at the top of Samach HaOmer Aleph, the Ola Gufa Minolon, the Ola itself, how do you know that it requires Yisod? Answer, Omar Kro El Yisod Mizbach HaOla. So in this pasuk you see, and we've dashed on the word Yisod and the word Ola, Alma Ola Teuna Yisod. So from here you see that the Korban Ola, its blood application requires it being applied to a part of the Mizbeach under which there is a base. And the diagram on the side which accompanies this Gemara is drawn according to Rashi's specifications. Here you have an aerial view of the Mizbeach. You can see the diagram in the margin of our Gemara. You have an aerial view of the Mizbeach, and it's a very non-detailed drawing. However, it's just to give you the impression of the Yisod appearing on the western and northern sides of the Mizbeach. As far as the southern and eastern side of the Mizbeach, there was only one Amo of Yisod. The Yisod sort of curled around on the eastern side and the southern side, but just by one Amo. So those sides of the Mizbeach are not considered having Yisod. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.